original meeting, one being Molly Petrie and the other being Thelma Godfrey and myself. The story that I think I cherish more than anything else from that very first conference I have been asked to tell you about. It's an unbelievable high spot in my life. I went to Aldborough and went to the Snake Maltins to the conference, and I was a very frightened, timid young, well, you've seen a picture of me on the very first beginning. I think only one person actually recognised me walking down the side of the Snake Maltins. I suppose I was about 36, 37, something like that. And so I just sat there, and it was full of the most wonderful people who were big names that I'd heard of all over the place. And so I just sat at the side and kept quiet and didn't say a word about anything until the London teachers began to really get to a few of us. Sorry, London teachers. They knew it all. They really did. They knew it all. And they kept airing their knowledge and telling us what we should be doing and what we shouldn't be doing. And in the end, Molly got up and she said, "It's all very well for you," she said, "but I come from Bristol. And we do have some thoughts about singing teaching, good thoughts about singing teaching and the quality of it in Bristol, of all places." And I just couldn't help it, because I just then got up and said, "What about me? I come from Burton-on-Trent." And actually, as far as singing teaching is concerned, Burton-on-Trent has sort of remained with me. And people say, "Coral Gauls and singing teaching, Burton-on-Trent." The big moment, though, having said that and opened my mouth and said it, the other big thing was, towards the end of that week, Peter Pears brought Benjamin Britten to that meeting in a wheelchair.
Yes.
He pushed him in a wheelchair, and he went round and introduced him to people. And I didn't ever expect him to be introduced to me, but he came round by me, and Britten said, "So you're the firebrand from Burton-on-Trent." And I don't think I'll ever forget that. It's a big high spot in my life.
Here is going to tell you one of his stories from his double spell. Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody has to be one.
Yeah. Second time I was. One of the things I was determined to do in my second chairmanship was to move one of the one-day conferences out of London. At that time, all the one-day conferences had all happened in London. And so I said, one of them is going out of London to anywhere else, I don't care where.
Burton-on-Trent.
So I moved it to Birmingham, and I thought it was very successful until the London teachers began to get to me, complaining about it was so far away. Why is it here? It could so very well be in London. And I sort of battered most of them away and said, "Look, it's as far from Birmingham to London as it is from London to Birmingham." And I think of all the years people have been coming down. And this went on till I got quite annoyed. And finally, one old dear literally laced into me. And just went on and on about it, about, you know, it's not right. And finally ended up and said, "I had to do two train journeys to get to here," and I lost it. And I said, "Two train journeys?" "Yes," she said. I said, "When I joined this institution first, I took a bus from home to the docks. I got the mail boat from the docks to Holyhead. I got the rattliest old British Rail train that went from Holyhead to Euston, 4.5 hours. I got an underground from Euston to Liverpool Street. I got a train from there to Ipswich. I got a coast from Ipswich to South London. In South London, you waited for a local bus to get you to Aldborough. And in Aldborough, you thumbed a lift to get to Snake.
Side, but with the British dimension. So, Liza, what would you like to say about Everton and your experiences?
I'm so frightened of going over the allotted 3 minutes. I had to write it down. I will read mine. It isn't nearly as funny as theirs. Anyway, the aspect of my tenure as chairman that took up the greatest chunk of my time and energy was the one that apparently impacted least of all on the individual members of AETOS. And I say apparently because actually the European Voice Teachers Association, or EVTA, does have a powerful and far-reaching influence on our membership in ways that very often go unnoticed and underappreciated. I may have got a lot of prematurely grey hairs in my struggles to comprehend the labyrinthine workings of the EU-sponsored Leonardo grant. Oh. These are grants that funded the huge European Pedagogy Weeks that took place, the third one being in Malta in 2010, as well as other EVTA projects. I may have burnt much midnight oil writing very diplomatic letters to our European colleagues in order to deliver that Pedagogy Week in the way that we wanted and one which AETOS could be proud of. I might equally often have wished that I had never, ever, ever heard the acronyms EFTA, EPW, YPP, and there's a new one which completely boxed me the other day.
G-Box.
G-Box. They love acronyms, and it used to drive me bonkers. Anyway, on many occasions I can say with absolute certainty that my husband Peter wished much the same as me, only more so. But when I look back on those 2 years with the benefit of hindsight, I can honestly say that very many of the highlights for me were in some way associated with EFTA and the AETOS relationship with our European fellows. I certainly would never have visited Poland had it not been for the necessity, shut up, Penny, the necessity to go there for an EFTA meeting, very long coach journey, and to witness the start of the first Vocal Pedagogy Week, which Penny took her student,
Jenny,
to. I cannot easily forget the sad, crumbling state of that beautiful theatre in which the opening concert took place, or indeed the still-present dead hand of the totalitarian state mindset of the hotel staff. That was utterly memorable. Talk to Paul again. I enormously enjoyed the 6th ICVT, just to give you another acronym, International Congress of Voice Teachers, that took place in Paris in 2009. And all the interesting people I met there amidst the faded grandeur of the Folies Bergères Theatre. And the Pedagogy Week in Marlborough the following spring, which gave a truly wonderful chance to engage with all these wonderful people from Europe, from about a dozen different European countries. I think the immense importance of our link with EFTA goes further even than all this. I'm quite certain that all my fellow ex-chairman and indeed Penny would concur with this. I found such inspiration in listening to presentations and lecturers from across the world, and was able to source some extraordinary speakers to come to Britain to talk to us. And I know that Penny will also concur with this, having just been in Latvia at a Eurovox conference, which was also run by Emta, and knowing that the links she has made with our colleagues in Germany, Denmark, Sweden and the Netherlands with regard to the matter of training of singing teachers. So I would only say that this, for me, the European link was absolutely wonderful. It was a dimension which I never thought I would get as involved in as I did. And as a graduate myself in European studies, I can only heartily raise a cheer to Europe. Thank you.
Slightly other side on Liza's very modest account there, because I can tell you that I have never seen British diplomacy in action in the way Liza handled that Paris week. I just stood beside her and watched her doing it, and it was amazing. The other bit of diplomacy we did in Paris was that a revered life member who isn't here, Hazel Wood, who has a wonderful way of choosing the most chic places to find herself, booked herself a lovely hotel in Paris and was very, very full of scorn for the one that Liza and I had booked, the same one. To top us all, Joy, who came at the last minute, found the most beautiful little boutique. Liza and I spent the whole week, this is where we became very good friends, not letting either of those people, I think I did admit to you, Joy, in retrospect, that it was a ghastly hotel. So that was one little story. Then when we come on to Marlborough, I put my hat on as administrator. And two little stories. I mean, I was talking to Mary today about her walking my dog every morning, which is another story. But we had a product of EFTA, which is actually a German registered association, called Sebastian. Sebastian dressed in black. Yes. But he maintained he was green. So I spent the week suggesting to him, A, that he should wear green clothes, and secondly, trying to keep him out of my hair, because everywhere I went in the office, there was Sebastian. So I thought, right, I'll get him. I'm going to get up at 6:30 in the morning. I'm going to be in the office. Off I went. Walked the dog there. He was standing there. I couldn't believe it. 7:15. They have not unlocked the doors yet. So I gave up on that one. But the extra bit to that is that what European colleagues said, and in fact somebody that I met again in Riga this week reminded me, she said, we always knew where the AOTOS group was. We just followed the gales of laughter. Which is really lovely. But now going back a little bit earlier, Eileen, who is our earliest ex-chair here tonight, would think you are. You were before Paul, I think.
Was I really?
Yes. Planning of when ICVT came to London, and for those of us of a certain generation, that would be a very special moment in history.
Yes.
Oh,
fabulous! Yes.
If I
leave
the Marlborough, then I came from Asta Lavera, and they'd say, "Who the hell? Where's that?"
That's right.
middle of Wales. To talk about ICVT. I went to one in Strasbourg, and there are some of you here who are with us in Strasbourg.
Yes.
And when I have to tell you this story, first of all, we went on a plane and then got on a train or something, and got there eventually. And there was a queue of us all waiting in the taxi rank, you know, as you do. And we eventually came to me, and I was on my own. And who was it said to me, come with us, Eileen, come with us. So I went in the taxi with my new friend and eventually got to this hotel. And when you go to the desk, you know, you have to tick your name. And they got to me, no Eileen Price at all. I thought, oh, well, you know, it'll appear somewhere. So that I had to sit there for ages whilst they all went to their rooms and unpacked and came down for supper or whatever. And eventually they said, oh, well, we'll give you this room. And they gave me a room. Norman Tattersall never forgot it. I opened the door, went in, and it was very dark, and a big black man stood up in the bed, and the IBC was quite cheap. Oh, dear. I've never lived that one down. But the one I was involved in is London, when we had the ICBT in London. And I remember at a council meeting, Norman Tattersall said, now, who are we going to have to open this? So me and my sort of said, well, I'll ask Joan Sutherland. I said, oh, yeah, that'd be good. But you see, Joan and I were students together. It was easy peasy, no problem, because I had known her as a student. And she was at the Cardiff Singer in the World, so I just went and asked her for tea, and I said, if they phoned you, and would you do it? Oh, do they really want me? She's so modest. I said, yes, nobody else. Anyway, to end my story about that, she came, and at the end of her speech, she said, please, Mr. Producer, leave the operas alone. When she was a student, she used to sit beside us all in the opera class, and she said to me one day, you know, Arne, I'll never make it.
Very much in AOTOS is our association with fellow associations, and I'm delighted that Sarah Leonard's here with us today, who of course has been a regular member of AOTOS and contributor over the years, but is now a distinguished president of the Association of English Singers and Speakers in her own right, and so she's just going to say a couple of words for us.
I'm the chair, not the president, sorry, Madam Chairman. We're a very old association. We're 102 years old. It's made the AOTOS rather baby. But it appears that when it's in those very early meetings, they invited people from the ISEC and also the NESS to sit in to watch a watching brief to see here and see what this little new association was up to. So Ellis Keeler, a well-known schooling teacher, when I was at the Guildhall, sat in on your early meeting and wrote a report to the AESS about you all, which is lovely pinned up there now, which says things like, they're not very focused, they're doing what they want to do. They've got to be far more, business-like about this, as if we were. The AESS was originally a gentleman's club. But it was in the right place, which is in a very similar place to AESS. It wants to further good singing, and for the AESS, good speaking as well. And that's very much still what we're after. And we have four competitions now. We've got just the one competition, but it's grown this century. For children from the age of 13 to 32. And they have to give this, it's a very unique set of competitions. And they have to give a themed recital of both song and speech. So they have to be tutored by their basically singing teacher in how to speak well. And it's quite a challenge, I'm sure, for everybody concerned. And Mary was talking today, wasn't she, about them standing up and speaking well. And so I have a competition to give people a real chance to practice standing up and speaking, even announcing themselves. That's all part of it. And there's real money to be won. Actually, I'd very much worth entering. We need each other, our associates.
And we have even talked to each other to make sure we don't clash.
Yes, we need each other because we need your students to enter our competition. You need our competition so that your students can practice their all sorts of wonderful things. I urge you to
okay, Sarah.
Between them reorganising so that you can see better what we're up to.
Thank you, Sarah. Very much. Now, Janice, our most recent past chair. You can now speak, Janice. Over to Janice.
Oh, right. Now, I'm actually reading this off my iPad. I'm going the wrong way. Having a formal dinner like this reminded me very much of the old days when we really didn't have formal dinners, and after that we had auctions. And I remember eyeing it coming in, sort of the glamorous necklaces, auctioning necklaces. People and situations past, really. We have many distinctive and awe-inspiring just characters in our organisation. When I was a young teacher, there was Constance Shadlock, Mary McCower, Norman Tattersall, Jean Austen Dobson, Tamara Bowen, Thea Carr, Esther Salomon, just to name but a few. And I could talk from my impressions, they were very these awe-inspiring people for hours. But really, there was another person that I particularly liked to think about tonight, who sort of occupied a special place in our association, and that was Caroline Brown. Yes. Yes. Now, Caroline's chairman of AOTOS from 1997 to 1999, and she saw us through some quite turbulent times. And she was a huge character, and when people say, who's Caroline Brown, who remembers, I think, oh, that's so sad because she was such a stable person who was always there. She taught at Dawn's School, and she ran a music shop called Warblers. And she could be seen at every conference and teacher training course, surrounded by her music and guiding teachers with her very extensive knowledge. She lived not far from me in Wiltshire, and she hosted the second and the third teacher training course. And I was a student on the third teacher training course. I was trying to work out when this was. I think it must have been about 1997, or something like that. Which at that time was directed by Eileen. And that was where I first met Caroline properly. Now, Caroline had two passions, and they were singing teaching and breeding whippets. she inherited a huge house from her father, the Citrine Films producer, Sidney Gilliatt. And she built this with 13 whippets, an Irish wolfhound, and a cross-eyed lurcher called Wallace, after Mrs. Wallace, the king's mistress. Yes. Okay, these dogs land to lay them beyond the sofa in the room as the master teachers of Molly Petrie, David Lennox, and Margaret Hyde guided their teachers and their students in the rooms and the bedrooms through their teacher training course. They were totally unimpressed by grand aunts, linguistic coaches, aspiring bassists, or coloratura soprano. Oh, it's really so funny, these whippets. Caroline had a highly amusing story about these whippets, who she said were completely oblivious to all singers, except for one rather well-known tenor, who every time he opened his mouth to sing, the dog all got up with one accord and walked out. Everything about her was unique, distinctive and eccentric, including her rather earthy but very cultured speaking voice, which coincidentally, I happen to think that the headmistress in the presence of Trinium Phil sounds remarkably lovely. She was a person who really helped to define the nature of AOTOS for me when she was young. She and I became friends and she taught both my daughters. And she died at the age of, I think it was 71, a week after coming to the bringing music to the teacher training course in Shoreditch. Penny and I were at her memorial service, along with professional colleagues from Dorset's and all the dogs she had bred, and many of the other dogs she had bred and their owners. Whilst we're moving forward in Eotos, it's absolutely lovely to sort of look back and remember these very, very wonderful people who were, which she was one that was safe for the heart.
Thank you, Janice. Thank you.
You are a star.
So we're going to end up by remembering another wonderful character who should be with us here tonight, quite definitely, equally distinctive. And the idea came to me from another member, Annabella Waite, who many of you will know lives in Truro and who can't be with us this weekend because she's basically a full-time carer at this stage. But she said to me, we should be collecting Mollyisms. And I thought, well, who better to collect the Mollyisms than our former conference director and dear colleague, Chris James. So over to you, Chris.
Well, Penny remarked that many of the younger members may not have much knowledge of Molly Petrie, her name has already been mentioned several times. My first encounter with Molly was 10 years before AOTOS was ever conceived, and Molly herself had not started teaching in that time, but she had written her first review. Many of you will remember that when Molly did the after-dinner entertainment, very often it was items that she had written before. And she did a review in one of our municipal theatres in Bristol. And I was very young in those days. I was just starting. And I had met her at an opera company which I joined, where she was a very established performer already. And she said, I need somebody young, and I want you in it. And Molly had that knack of volunteering you for something. You wondered if you ought to do it, or if you should, or even if you could. But she managed to sort of talk people into doing things, and she purchased that on me. It was a riot. Her writing was fantastic. Mm-hmm. She had written this whole evening's review, which lasted about 2 hours. She wrote it, she produced it, and alongside a colleague that some of you will know, a pianist in Bristol called John Marsh, who wrote the music, and he performed it as well in company with another distinguished pianist in Bristol, we put this show on. And I've got a whole box of pictures of that. It's going back to the dim dark ages. And the funniest thing to me was, and it really underlined Molly's skill with words, she wrote a sort of a Gilbert and Sullivan opera. The music was written by John Marsh, and it paraphrased Sullivan's style in those operas. And she wrote the libretto. And it was all about Shakespeare characters. Titania married Macbeth, and at the wedding, I think Juliet was chief bridesmaid. Hamlet appeared in it somewhere, and he was the local village window cleaner. God knows why, but he was. And I was one of Macbeth's soldiers. But this so-called opera company didn't have any money, so they had to make do and mend costumes. And I had a sort of granddad type white shirt on with braces holding up a car rug for a kilt and a paintbrush for a spotlight. Looking rather gormless. And I've still got a picture of that somewhere. The thought occurs to me, if any of you want to see that picture, I would be very obliged if you forget I ever said anything about your own business. But 10 years later, Eotos was formed, and I think, in a way, we've been hearing so much about words today that it's one of the things which characterised Molly as a person and with her teaching. I heard her once say, in a master class, you've got to say the words a lot so they're used to how they feel in your mouth. Mm. And when she had not, when the association was just starting, she was asked to be magazine editor. And her articles in the magazine and the way she edited that showed her great skill in with using words. She used words with great impact where they really got the point that she was trying to make across. And the same applied when she was giving lectures. Sadly, she can't be with us today. She was 95 a few weeks ago. So I unlikely we shall ever see her at one of our gatherings again. But we think of her tonight and wish her peace and serenity in her new surroundings. But as you were here, Annabella Wake has sent in some isms, some Mollyisms, and Penny asked me if I would like to read them out. Don't diminuendo on a long note. Let the breath run out. In learning slow tempo songs, try a faster tempo to begin with, so as to encourage the shape of phrases, then slow down as the poise of the singer develops. Loud is bad singing. Strong is good singing. Feel a crescendo through long notes. Singing must not press, it must spin. Find your little girl sound. Don't go serious on me. Singing is so much more about expelling air, not replacing it. Sail on the breath. Most of us sing in a two-story house. We should do more singing in the attic. Trust the voice. You do the thinking, let the voice do the singing. And Janice has added to this, what it needs is more body, and I mean, capital letters, body, and direct the sound back. Little pearls of wisdom from Molly. And I wonder whether perhaps we've all got our own witticisms. If there was anybody, the thought crossed my mind, I was thinking about the song the other day, songs my mother taught me. If we had anybody really witty enough to take witticisms from all of us, and we could perhaps do a parody of that song, Isms My Teacher Taught Me. But I think Penny would like us to perhaps now, if we've got isms to add to the list, to perhaps stand up and say them.
It's just carrying on from Molly, actually, because when I joined the society, we referred to, and I'm sorry, you were one of them, Eileen.
Yes, you were.
The more superior members, we used to call them the grand dams. Molly was one of those, and she opened one of our conferences in Birmingham. Would you believe, in Birmingham a few years ago, and it was lovely to hear her. And this, she had a great sense of humour, as you've heard, but also a great sense of dignity. And she spoke about words, and particularly songs that talked about love. And she said as a young girl she had to sing about these songs of love, and you felt love in your heart. And then she said with a very straight face, but it wasn't until a lot later that I discovered you felt love a lot lower down.
And she often came up to Judicate. And we always had a meal the night before, so I don't know whether she'd had too much to drink or what, but she just fairly recently at that time, she'd been adjudicating at a festival, I think either in Hull, near Hull, or whatever. and she was going on about how awful it was. Whatever the best of it was, it was terrible, Jackie. She said, and the accommodation that they put you in, what? She said, I was so awful, I really felt not safe in the room that they gave me, which was in a pub or something, I don't know. So she said, I had to sort of ram a chair under the door handle to make sure that, you know, that she felt safe during that. She said, it was so awful. She said, I would never, ever wish adjudicating that festival on my worst enemy. I gave them your name.
Well, I think that that's been lovely. And thank you all for coming. I'm going to finish with a little Mollyism of my own, which probably sums up the association. Molly came to do a masterclass for me at my old home fairly soon after I'd been very seriously ill. And I went back, I suppose I'd been operated on the beginning of August, and this was mid-September, and I was already preparing to sing, and I had a couple of concerts planned. But I'd chickened out of going back to teaching. I'd postponed going back beyond the time that I'd taken off. And I was bemoaning this fact to Molly as she was going in the car. And she looked me very straight in the eye and she said, look, my dear, you can opt to sing at 70 or 80%. You can never teach at less than 100. It's a good idea. Go back to chatting.
You don't have to.